This is Murder Scotland, a podcast that looks at famous and not so famous murders that happened in Scotland or were committed by people with a connection to Scotland. We'll just see how tenuous we can get. My name is Julie Lament. Me and my co-host Alan Nicol will look at these crimes with 21st century eyes and discuss, are they really what we thought they were? Welcome back to Murder Scotland. It's taken us a little bit longer to create this series than we had planned, so apologies for the long wait for the new series. This episode is about World's End murders, so I hope you enjoy. World's End murders, I was there on Friday, I think. Is it the World's End pub on the Royal Mile?
It is.
Right, okay. I didn't go in it, but I took a picture because I knew you wanted to do this one, so I've got a picture to put on the website.
Oh, have you?
Yeah.
Okay, first question, why is it called the World's End?
Now, I think I know the answer to this. There was a wall that goes through part of Edinburgh, and It was the last pub before the wall.
That's just about right. I think the wall, it was a walled city, Edinburgh.
Yeah.
And after the Battle of Flodden in 1513, the wall was built to stop English troops trashing the place.
Okay.
And eventually, the way everyone looked at it was, they said the world ended at the wall.
Yeah.
So that was the way, you know, it's classic Edinburgh people, you know. If you're not in Edinburgh, you don't count, sort of thing.
No.
Anyway, okay, you can delete that one.
Your pals in Edinburgh will like that chat. Yeah, but there are other pubs called World's End in other places. So when I read that about the wall, I was thinking, I wonder if it's always, like, because it's like the last pub before an old city wall or something.
Yeah, apparently, I've never studied this, but apparently there is a sort of marker to show where the wall used to be.
Yeah.
But as I say, it was part of the old town in Edinburgh.
Do you know what? Actually, I did see the wall, and it's just along,
is that right?
Yeah, it's further along the street. It's like going up the hill, and I think it's got a name. I don't know if it's Flodden Wall or something. I'll need to Google it.
But it could be.
It's got a name. And it just is a big old wall. And you must have, like, you probably walked past it a million times.
I probably have it without even noticing.
It's just a wall, yeah.
But it was all to do with Flodden, as I say, which was an away defeat for the Scottish army.
Yeah, an away defeat. So, right. So, and I think the name, the World's End Murders, makes it sound like it's like a doomsday cult or something kind of hugely, like, massive, like it was the world is ending because of this.
I
definitely think we need to update people on what happened.
Right, okay. It's called World's End Murders because of the pub, obviously.
Yeah.
And that's what it means, that the world's possibly coming to an end, because that was the end of the known world to Edinburgh people. Edinburgh people. And these two girls, Christy Needy and Helen Scott, they're both 17. And it was 1977, October 77. They went for a drink in the World's End pub. And they were both murdered. I think it was like 6 miles apart or something. Their bodies were found. And it took the authorities till 2014 to get a conviction.
Wow.
So that was like 37 years. And the judge, Lord Matthews, gave Angus Sinclair 37 years in prison.
Jeez.
And that's the longest sentence that anyone's ever had in Scotland, as I believe it. But he died, I think, when he was like 73, Sinclair. But if he hadn't died and he'd made it to 106, he'd have been eligible for parole at that point.
Oh my goodness, that's crazy, isn't it?
Yeah, but he had a terrible record for murder and rape and you name it.
Yeah, he was going to be in for life no matter what.
Oh, yeah, he was already serving a life sentence when he was convicted.
So the girls went to World's End pub. So back then in the 70s, was it less touristy than it is now? Because that's That's not a place I feel like regular people would just be wandering in, because it's right between, for people that haven't been to Edinburgh, sort of, I wouldn't say it's halfway down the Royal Mile, but the Royal Mile is about a mile long road between the Palace of Holyrood and Edinburgh Castle. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. it is just tourist central. It is non-stop. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
The only people you get up that part that aren't tourists are lawyers, really. That's mm-hmm. about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
But these are two ordinary girls. They were both 17, as I say, and they were just chancing their arm, getting a drink, I suppose.
Yeah.
Of course, their families were just an ordinary family, and they had no idea that the girls were in any danger at all.
Yeah.
Because it was only afterwards that they realised that the two girls had been talking to two people in the pub, and apparently there were two very similar looking girls in the pub, and there was a lot of confusion about that, because a lot of people said, oh, I saw these two girls that were talking to two men, and there's still doubt as to whether that was the same two.
Oh, or it could have been the other ones.
It
wow.
could have been the other ones, yeah.
Is this a daytime drink, or was this a nighttime drink?
It was a
drink?
Nighttime drink.
Right, okay.
It was after work. Now, I can't remember what night it was. It was like a Friday or a Saturday night or something.
Yeah.
And the girls had told their parents that they were going out after work, and that's what they did. They went there. They were 17. They must have got alcohol. And apparently there was a police officer who saw one of the girls, and she was quite drunk.
All right, okay.
And he went over and said, are you all right? Because apparently she had slipped or something. And at that point, possibly Sinclair had said, oh, I'll give you a lift somewhere. So they don't know whether the conversation was started in the pub or whether it was outside. And this police officer thought, well, you know, she's obviously knows these two people.
Yeah.
And that was Sinclair and Hamilton, his brother-in-law.
So the two of them had gone out to the pub together in an attempt to pick up girls, do you think, for the purpose of rape and murder?
Yeah.
Or they just saw the opportunity?
I think so, yeah. Certainly, Sinclair had a really bad record. He was only 16 when he first murdered a girl. She was 8.
So why was he walking about Edinburgh, not in prison?
Well, I suppose by that time he had done his time.
He was a child.
It was culpable homicide rather than murder he was done for.
Jeez.
And he had killed a girl, he'd strangled her. She was only 8 years old.
What the hell?
And he was just an evil, evil man.
So he'd gone to prison for, do you know how long he'd gone to prison for?
I think it was like about 8 years or something, because he was only 16 at the time.
For killing a child. Oh, uh-huh. That's so awful.
It was something as small as that.
And then he got out and like the court system were just like, all right, he's done his time. Not like, as a 16-year-old, he's clearly already a vicious predator. We need to mm-hmm. keep an eye on this mm-hmm. guy.
Yeah.
Wow.
Plus, he had a van, which was a Toyota Hiace, I think is how you pronounce it. And it was like the cover was that him and his brother-in-law, Hamilton, were going fishing. And, I mean, they didn't do any fishing at all. They just trapped, the two girls in the van. And it meant, I suppose, that they could get a bit of time to themselves to carry out all these horrible things. That
bloody
they did.
Hell, so it was super premeditated. They brought like a murder van with them,
uh-huh,
or at least a raping van. Oh, my God.
Uh-huh.
Oh, my God.
Uh-huh. It was a horrific case.
Wow, that's awful.
There's a guy called Tom Wood, and Tom was in charge of this inquiry. He's written a book called Ruxton, the First Modern Murder. And it's all about Buck Ruxton in the 1930s. And Tom has written a book about The World's End Murders and about Ruxton. And he was really, really appreciated the fact that Sinclair got 37 years from Lord Matthews, because he said that he was worried that the Sinclair guy could possibly, you know, get back out at some point.
Yeah.
But as we were saying earlier, there's no doubt about it. He carried out a lot more murders.
Yeah.
He was a serial killer.
Yeah, I've seen television programs, not about the World's End murders, but about other murders, and maybe three on these different programs where people saying, "Oh, we think this could be one of Angus Sinclair's." They just never were able to kind of tie it to him.
Yeah, yeah.
So he only got prosecuted for, well, the original murder of the small girl, and then these two women. There wasn't any other murders.
He was convicted of one more murder, but there were three others. I think ages ago I told you when I was selling paraffin, I had Jesse McTavish as one of my customers.
Yeah.
And another one of the customers was Hilda McCauley, and she was found at Lang Bank on the banks of the Clyde, and she'd been they reckon that she'd been murdered and raped by Sinclair. And it was really tragic because she had two young sons in the house. I remember going to the door when she'd gone missing or something. And, the whole place was obviously really, really upset about it.
Yeah, of course.
Because she was only, I think she was in her 30s.
Yeah.
Macaulay. And, that had all the hallmarks of Angus Sinclair.
Yeah.
Plus there's other ones that they try and... They reckon that there's probably enough. Some people do to have prosecuted him for these murders. In fact, Tom Wood, the very person I was talking about, he presented a case on the basis that there was enough to prosecute Sinclair for at least three other murders.
Yeah.
But I think that the authorities took the view that there wasn't enough.
The programme I saw suggested that he trussed up his victims in a certain way. Like, he tied them, I think, with their kind of their hands and their feet tied together up behind their back.
Uh-huh.
Like, it was a very particular way that he tied up his victims, and that's why they thought that these other victims might be some of his.
Uh-huh.
But there was also a question about whether or not they were the brother-in-laws, whether or not just Angus Sinclair out there murdering on his own, or if they split up and did separate murders. Mm-hmm. The whole thing was just terrifying.
It was. There's no doubt about it. I mean, it was just horrific, the fact that these two were intent in doing something that particular night, and these two girls were really unfortunate that they ended up... obviously, what has happened is they've said to them, we'll give you a lift home.
Yeah.
And then, of course, their bodies are found the next day.
So they were taken away in the murder van, and then where were their bodies? Like, were they? You said they were strangled.
They were both strangled. They were both raped. And what made the police think there were two people involved was that the knots were different. Their hands were tied up.
Okay.
And there were different knots. So they thought that it was the work of two different people.
Wow. But only Angus Sinclair got prosecuted with it.
But Hamilton died in 1996, it was.
Yeah.
And in fact, the first trial in 2007, it was really quite controversial. I remember this really well because I was defending people at the time. And the prosecutor was a guy called Alan Mackay, who I've got to know really well. Awful nice chap, very competent. But the defence was Edgar Praise. And Edgar is a real character.
Yeah.
He's very, very good at what he does. And at the end of the case, he had a no case to answer submission. And that means that the prosecution haven't proved their case. And the judge was Lord Clark. And he agreed with that because they were unable to say that the, I think the DNA by that time in 2007 was, it was sufficient for them to prosecute. According to the information that I've read about, the girls were discovered, one of them was discovered in East Lothian, in a place called Gosford Bay, and it was 6 miles away from the other girl, and she was in a field. They had been beaten, gagged, tied up, raped and strangled, and there was no attempt to cover their bodies. In fact, one of the girls was completely naked and the other was naked from the waist down. So they must have enjoyed, you know,
bastards,
leaving them
bastards.
Like that.
Were they murdered at the same time, or were they able to tell that?
Well, that's a point, because they reckon that one of the girls might have seen her friend getting murdered first.
That's what I was really hoping you weren't going to say. I was hoping you'd say that they both went exactly the same time, so there wasn't one like, oh, that's so awful.
Well, I think that's speculation, I suppose, but the chances are that one of them was murdered first. And the other one realised that. So it's really, really tragic that these two 17-year-olds should, you know, have to go through all that. But Sinclair was convicted in 1961. He was only 16. And that was for killing a girl called Catherine Rehill in Glasgow. I think that was in his own house. He had enticed this young girl in and he had sexually assaulted her and then strangled her.
An eight-year-old?
She was eight. Uh-huh.
Jesus.
And he was convicted also of a murder in 2001 of a 17-year-old called Mary Gallagher, and that was in Glasgow. And they reckon that there's at least four other women between 77 and 78, that he, it was in the course of about 6 months or something, he struck all this time.
If society had just put him down after he killed the eight-year-olds, then we would have three women alive today.
Oh, definitely, but, you know, I'm not sure about the death penalty, but...
No, I'm not either, but I just, like, I don't know. There must be something, for clearly people like that are just going to keep doing it. There must be something. They can't be released into society. They just can't.
Well, the judge in the 61 trial had said something about him being a real, real danger.
Yeah.
And, of course, they've got to, the parole board's got to make a decision at some point.
Yeah.
If you've served your time, then, you know, there's nothing they can do about it. If your time is up, what they can do is they can, if it's a life imprisonment, then they can just recall you all the time. But up until that point, there's nothing they can do if your sentence is determinate and finished.
But if you've got a clear and obvious, like, mental health predilection towards murdering children, then even if you serve your time, like, surely that's, I mean, it's to the whole point of having a legal system to protect, to protect the people.
Yeah.
Like, somebody like that, they're always going to do it again. Like, if that happened today, are you telling me, like, there's people out there walking about right now that have murdered children and got off on it? And they're out there, and there's nothing we can do about it.
No, well, I suppose things have changed to some extent for the better, because they've a thing called MAPA, which is multi-agency, and if it's somebody who's like Sinclair, then they all contribute to, you know, the idea that this person should be released or at all. It's maybe improved a wee bit since 1960s or 1970s. because people are, they're less inclined to get released by the parole board if they're life in prison, you know, for murder.
Yeah.
So I think it's probably improved slightly, but at the same time, it's what can you do?
I would say the one thing that I've ever thought that was good about the American legal system is that some states they offer chemical castration for people mm-hmm. like that.
Yeah.
I genuinely think. I'm not into like forcing people to have medical procedures done, but a lot of those types of people actually volunteer to do it mm-hmm. because it mm-hmm. tortures them as well that they're like that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I've heard of these cases in the past.
Yeah.
Where people know that they're going to offend and they hate themselves for it.
Yeah.
And, you know, they castrate themselves, some of them.
Oh, really? Oh, God.
Oh, yeah. I've heard of that. It was, you know, especially in a place like Peterhead Prison that used to have the sex offenders. That was quite a common occurrence, apparently, that they would make sure that they couldn't offend again.
So, see, when Angus Sinclair killed Hilda McCauley and then he was prosecuted, you said, in 2001.
That wasn't Hilda McCauley.
Oh, sorry.
That was... 2001, Mary Gallagher, she was 17.
Mary Gallagher, so when he murdered Mary Gallagher, is that the first point that the police thought he's maybe done the world's end murders? What was it that brought them back to him?
I think it was the fact that there was advances in DNA.
Oh, and
it was a
right.
cold case.
Okay.
They tried unsuccessfully in 2007 to prosecute him. And then they eventually decided that double jeopardy, you know, the rule being that if you've been tried for murder or rape or something, then you cannot be retried. But they've changed that now.
Yeah.
That was 2011. And the view seems to be that if there's something, that there's new evidence, for instance, then... the double jeopardy rule gets thrown out. And that's what happened with Sinclair because of the advances in DNA.
Yeah.
They were able to show that the DNA was his and Hamilton's, his brother-in-law. And that was from the girls.
Wow.
Plus they had a soil expert, Professor Dawson, she's absolutely brilliant because
yeah.
she's able to pinpoint soil. For instance, she was given a sample of soil and it came from Mugduck.
Oh, really?
Near to Glasgow.
Yeah.
And she got it spot on.
But she knew it was from Mugduck?
Just by the chemical content of it.
Wow.
She was able to say exactly where it came from. And she was able to say that... one of the girls' feet had soil which matched, it showed that she'd been barefoot and she'd been marched somewhere. I thought that was the girl that was found in the field.
Okay.
And she was able to contribute to that, as well as the DNA, obviously.
Yeah.
Which was pretty conclusive.
How did they tie the soil back to them, though, to Angus Sinclair?
Well, I think what they did, they took the sample of the soil where one of the girls was found,
mm-hmm.
and they were able to say that she had been marched into the field. So that confirmed that the soil that was on her feet had come from that area.
Okay.
But they couldn't turn around and say it had any... link with Sinclair.
So just
or
that
Hamilton.
That's where she was murdered, was in the field.
She was
alive
field.
When she came in. That was
yeah.
that was the point of that.
Because
right.
her feet were covered in this. But
that's crazy. She can get as much detail as just like the start of a field or the end of a field.
Oh, yeah, yeah. It's really quite impressive.
Yeah.
I went to a lecture that she gave and I was utterly convinced that. You know, that could help lots and lots of prosecutions.
Yeah.
When you see somebody who's as good as that.
Oh, wow, that's brilliant.
But as I say, it was a DNA, it was a cold case. And they tried in 2007 to convict Sinclair. But I think the judge made the right decision, because Edgar Praes was very thorough. And Edgar argued that they couldn't prove or disprove the concept that the girls had consented, or one of them had consented to sex. Because if they found semen, they did find semen, and it was a mixture of him, Sinclair, and Hamilton. And he was quite right. I think the judge made the right decision.
Wait a minute. I'm getting confused here with this argument. So Edgar Praes' argument was that they may have consented to have sex with these men, both of them, at age 17, but that doesn't necessarily mean that they were murdered. Like they were the men that murdered them, or
basically, what had happened was he had a special defence, which is something you've got to lodge in advance, to the extent that it was consensual, the sex was consensual, and the judge wasn't able to say whether it was Sinclair or Hamilton who had gone ahead and killed the girls.
And they weren't able to say, well, okay, aside from the fact that, okay, in your legal mind, this makes a lot of sense, okay? In my mind, this sounds mental. So if we're still going down the Edgar Praes route, are they not able to tell that they were raped just by the fact that they were tied up and beaten?
I think the point that was made was they couldn't say who'd done it. They couldn't say it was Sinclair or Hamilton.
What? And you can't prosecute both of them on this?
Well, but Hamilton was dead by that time.
No, I know, but I mean...
So it's the sort of thing you could predict that Sinclair would do. He would say, well, which one of us did it? And, you know, it's impossible to say who had done it, because he can just turn around and say, it's my brother-in-law. And
but he's got a past record of murdering women.
Yeah, but the jury don't know that, and the judge children. Doesn't know that.
But you said before that you're allowed to use that, what was it, the Molotov thing? What was it called?
The Murov.
Murov.
Oh, yes. That's
yeah.
Right.
The Murov thing, where they've got a past game of being like that. They can't do that.
No. What they've got to do is they've got to treat every prosecution, or certainly up until fairly recently, separately and without disclosing previous convictions. So the jury... there's something that they can do in England. They can say it's like similar fact to evidence. And in other words, as soon as you hear somebody's a murderer or a rapist, then there's no point in listening any further, because what you're doing is you're saying, this is them just doing it again.
Yeah, but I mean...
That was the same as Robert Black. Remember we talked about Robert Black?
Yeah, but if you've got past game of doing it... It's likely you have done it again, right?
No. Oh, yeah. Well, I suppose that's the sort of common sense approach, but it's not the legal sense.
Yeah, I guess not the legal sense, because I can't believe you're like, Edgar Praes was right. I'm like, what?
I think he was.
So they were last seen in a pub together, and then they were found, next time they're seen, they're dead, naked, tied up separately in fields. They've... clearly been raped and beaten, but he was saying that it could have been consensual sex, and the other man may have been the one that did the murdering, beating, which is the most unlikely scenario, right? Well, the one of them, I can't even walk through that. One of them had sex with them in the van consensually, both of them, and then the other one took both girls away, raped them, beat them, murdered them, dumped them in separate fields. That still makes no sense to me. It makes no sense.
Yeah, but you've got to prove your case beyond a reasonable doubt. So if you take that standard, and it's a really high standard, then you've got to be able to show that, for instance, that Sinclair had murdered them.
Yeah.
And he was able to turn around and say, well, it wasn't me. It was Hamilton. So what had happened was when he was retried in 2014, there had been advances in DNA, and they were able to say, well, they undid the knots. I think it was one of the girls' bras that had been
tied her up.
And they were able to say that when you undid the knots, then it was a mixture of his, Sinclair's DNA,
uh-huh,
and Hamilton's DNA.
Wow, that's...
So that was a real advance.
Right, and then they couldn't deny it.
He was convicted.
Yeah.
He was convicted. I think it was unanimously by the jury. That was when the Lord Advocate, Frank Mulholland, prosecuted it.
Yeah.
And that was in 2014. So the advances in DNA captured Sinclair eventually. And of course, earlier on, much earlier in 2000, and well, I can't remember what it was, what the exact date was, but he gave a sample of his DNA, and they had him on record, so they were able to say that was him. Yeah. But what they do is, the police always take another sample. So when you're detained for something, the police will say, we're taking a DNA sample. And, you know, they can say all the like. They can turn around and say, well, you're not getting a sample.
Yeah.
But they'll always get one because they can petition the court to get a sample of DNA. And they already had his on record, so they were able to say that was definitely Sinclair's DNA.
And if they take your DNA, they're allowed to just keep that on record forever, or only if you've been prosecuted for a crime?
Yeah, so if you're prosecuted for a crime, then they can, if it depends what the crime is, but when they take DNA as a matter of course for anything, I think after about 2 or 3 years or something, it's destroyed.
Right, okay.
Because it's only fair that it was a low-level crime, let's say, then they won't keep it on record. Whereas for somebody like Sinclair, they had his on record because he was such a danger.
Yeah.
You know, so I think that's what eventually got him done. And as I say, he got 37 years, and that was right back to 1977 to 2014. And if you work out the difference, that's 37 years.
Yeah. They should have given him 80.
Well, you know,
die in prison anyway, right? He was going to die regardless in prison.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, well, that's right. But, you know, in America, they say, you know, life and 100 years, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
And that's for the avoidance of doubt, I suppose. Whereas here, as I say, he'd have been 106 if he'd survived to get back out or be considered for parole. And, of course, he died when he was 73.
Yeah.
So it had the same effect as one of the American sentences. They knew exactly what they were doing. Or Lord Matthews did by saying, you know, 37 years, because that was the amount of time that the families grieved.
What's a normal kind of sentence that a judge would hand out for a brutal murder?
Well, we're talking about Linda Spence, and that was Lord Pentland, I think, who gave one of them 33 years, I think it was.
So they can do it in the 30s.
They can certainly, you know, give us... what has happened is, ever since, up till Brexit, I suppose, we had European law to consider.
Mm-hmm.
And it was decided that what we should do is have a punishment part when somebody gets life and they will not get out before they've served the punishment part. So, for instance, they get lots and lots of people back through court because they didn't have a punishment part. But most of them were, like, you know, 20 or 15 years or something. It's unusual to get somebody getting 30 years.
Okay, what does punishment part mean? It just, that's how many years they have to do, regardless, before they're considered for parole.
Yeah.
And that 15 or 20 years would be the punishment piece or the total piece?
Well, if it's life imprisonment, that's you for the rest of your life.
Okay.
There have been cases where people have been sentenced to life in prison and they've gone out into the community, committed a minor breach of the peace and then been slammed up in jail again.
Forever, for the rest of their life?
Oh, yeah, that's happened before.
So why was Angus Sinclair not given life when he did other murders?
Well, he was given life for that one murder that we mentioned.
Yeah.
But he was only given 8 years, I think it was, for the first one when he was 16.
But that was because he was a kid when he did it.
Well, it was culpable homicide. It was decided it was less than murder. But by the time he got 37 years, he was already doing a life sentence.
All right, okay.
Already.
Yeah.
So the jury didn't know about that, obviously.
So normally when people get life, they're only doing like 20 years, just to recap.
It depends what the punishment part is.
Yeah, they're doing the punishment part.
Oh, they're doing that,
and then
okay.
They're eligible for parole.
Ah, okay. Well, ostensibly they are, but as I say, they've got life imprisonment.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what it means. A lot of people don't accept that. They think it's too soft that people, get like 20 years in prison for murder. But the fact is that they could be recalled at any time.
Yeah.
And they frequently are. There was one case many years ago where somebody who, I don't think he was perfectly sane, to be honest, he fell out with his social worker and he swore at his social worker and he spent the rest of his life in prison.
Wow.
You know.
But so, I still don't get why they get out. That's the getting out piece before they get brought back in. Is it what, good behaviour? What?
There are certain things that they've got to do in prison. They've got to, you know, train for freedom, as it were. They've got to go out into the community, learn how to be sort of sensible about things, do all the courses. A lot of them are really good at doing that.
Yeah.
And, you know, they end up ticking all the boxes.
So there are, okay, I'm so ignorant about prison. So when somebody goes in and they're in long term, there are courses and things to help them like rehabilitate to the outside.
Uh-huh.
I had no idea about that. I didn't realise.
Yeah, and you know, as anyone in the parole board will tell you, some people are great at ticking all the boxes and they say all the right things.
Yeah.
And then they get out and they carry on dealing drugs or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, so they've sort of conned the parole board.
What kind of crimes do you get life in prison? Would you get that for drug dealing or this is just murder?
It's usually just murder.
Okay.
It's usually murder. I mean, it can be, you know, there's a thing called an order for lifelong restriction, which is just as effective as a life sentence, an OLR, it's called. And it's quite deceiving because some people, when they get OLRs, think they'll get a really good deal. And it turns out that the judge makes an order for lifelong restriction and then only gives them like 5 years or something.
Uh-huh.
And they think they're going to get out after 5 years. They're not, because it's an order for lifelong restriction. So they're going to be kept in and they're going to be kept in. And the 5 years will be the first review, basically.
Right, okay.
But after that, they can be the rest of their natural lives. That's what it means, lifelong restriction.
Wow.
So that can be for anything. That can be for rape or whatever. Whereas murder is life imprisonment.
Okay. Right, makes sense. Yeah, sorry for my daft questions.
Not at all.
I just didn't understand that.
When the trial actually started, they discovered that the girls had been, as I say, they were tied up, their wrists were tied, there were different knots, and I think that's the argument that the one obviously attacked one of the girls and somebody else attacked the other.
Yeah.
Which was the only argument, I suppose, the Crown could have had in 2007.
And did Hamilton, did he get prosecuted for other murders?
No, he died beforehand.
No, no, but I mean, any other crimes outside of these two?
No, I don't think he was. I think he was basically a sneak thief or something.
Right, okay. But he didn't just start murdering this one night, right? I mean...
It probably didn't, but at the same time, it was his sister that was married to Sinclair. And I think Sinclair had led him astray to some extent.
Okay.
He had a minor record for theft, I think.
Yeah.
But obviously Sinclair had decided that it was time he advanced his criminal behaviour to murder and rape.
But being led astray is like going to a titty bar. It's not going out and raping and murdering people.
That's a fair observation, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He may have committed other murders with Angus Sinclair after that.
Uh-huh.
But we don't think he had a murdering career on his own. It was just with Angus Sinclair.
It's impossible to say, but there's no doubt about it that he was involved, certainly with Edie and Scott, the two girls that were murdered at the World's End. But whether he was involved in the other murders, I really don't know.
Yeah.
But certainly his DNA was found in the two World's End murders.
Yeah.
But I don't think it was found anywhere else.
And his DNA was on the knots as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was a combination of him and Sinclair, who had, I was in 2014.
Yeah.
When a forensic scientist undid the knots and then swabbed it for DNA. And I think that's really what the clincher was in 2014. In that it showed that Sinclair had helped tie the knots.
Yeah.
And I think his DNA was also found in one of the girls, I think it was her coat or something. So that showed that he had contact with her.
Yeah.
But that's not as important as, I suppose, the knot tying.
Well, and the semen, right?
And the semen, yeah.
That would be the smoking gun right there.
If you want, you can turn around and say, you know, it was consensual sex, all the rest of it. But when your DNA is in a knot, that gives it a different sort of explanation, you would think.
Well, yeah, and the fact that they were beaten and murdered.
In fact, one of the girls had a footprint on her face.
Oh, so my God.
Obviously,
bastards, absolute bastards, the pair of them. I'm sorry, but even in a world, right, where Hamilton, I can't even say this out loud, they had consensual sex, clearly didn't happen. Even in the world that it happened, that he would have stood by and let Angus Sinclair bind and murder these girls.
Mm-hmm.
I just... How anyone could live with themselves for behaving like that?
Yeah, but there's no doubt about it that as a result of the cold case in 2014, they decided to prosecute again, then it's quite clear that Hamilton was involved.
Yeah.
There's no doubt about it. He was, you know, Sinclair had decided it was a good idea and Hamilton went along with it.
Yeah, exactly. Went along with it. Uh-huh. He also was an absolute scumbag.
Undoubtedly. Undoubtedly. After the 2007 case, there was all sorts of recriminations because, as you've already said, people couldn't understand the reasoning behind that.
Yeah.
But they've got to show murder beyond a reasonable doubt.
Yeah, I know, but for your lawyer mind, that makes lots of sense. For everyone else, they're like, clearly these fuckers did this.
Uh-huh.
why have they still got their balls? That's what the rest of planet Earth is thinking at this point.
Yeah.
Whereas you're like, oh, there's no reasonable doubt.
Well, I do remember 2007, the stushy that was caused by this judge making the decision.
Yeah.
In my view, he had no alternative. I think, you know...
But he knew. He knew this guy had done it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
he knew. Everyone involved knew. And this guy... Well, I mean, I guess he was going back to jail, right? So it's a different scenario. But in a different world, he might have been going back to the street where he might have killed other women. That's the thing that's kind of shocking about that whole piece.
Well, if the Crown don't have a proper case, then that's it. You know,
there's a case there, though. That's what I don't get. There is a case. Like, they just need the right person to go after it.
Well, as I say, it was advances in DNA eventually got the case against Sinclair.
No, I get that. But see, when you were a prosecutor, would you have just gone, no, I can't prosecute this?
I think it's really difficult to try and criticise the prosecution because they did their best.
Yeah.
But without the DNA advance... At that stage in 2007, it was kind of unanswerable that the defence were able to say, well, it was the other guy who did it. I mean, Sinclair had consensual sex with the girl or the girls.
Yeah.
But it's the other guy who must have murdered them. And, you know, that's not proving your case beyond a reasonable doubt.
But you still think you could put that to a jury and let them make that decision, no?
No, because that's why you've got a no case to answer submission.
Right.
It's to stop it going to the jury. It's to stop the case, you know, stop the jury having to consider the case.
Right, okay.
And what you do is you have a no case to answer submission and then the judge decides.
Right,
It doesn't go to the jury anymore.
Right.
And
so there was no situation that was going to go. Okay, I get it. I get what you're saying.
Well, as I say, the judge was maligned in the newspapers and, in fact, in the Scottish Parliament as well.
Yeah.
On the basis that he made a mistake. And I don't think he did. I think he did. Oh, well, that's fair enough.
No, I mean, I just don't... Like, I 100% get what you're saying. I do get it. I 100% get it. But at the same time, he so clearly did it. It's like he even left semen. They both did it clearly together. Mm-hmm. So just saying that it was one or the other, like, okay, it must have been him, it wasn't me. That still doesn't that doesn't work for me. Then I would, if that was me and I was the judge, I'd be like, well, can they not prosecute them as if they are together? The two of them did it together, even though one of them's dead. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, but you could tell before the case even started that his defence would be it was consensual sex, and it must have been Hamilton that carried all this out. I mean, you could predict that was going to happen.
Right, and then should he not be answering, like, to a jury about, you know, what was he doing at the time? Doing his nails? Like,
well, if the evidence isn't there, you can't convict somebody of murder.
I know, but it just, the whole sentence doesn't make any sense. There's no sense that this makes, that, like, one guy had consensual sex with two girls, and then the other one tied them up on his own, and then took them to separate places and on his own murdered them in two separate locations. While one was in the back of the van waiting to be murdered, one was getting murdered in a field.
Yeah. Like,
it doesn't make any sense that one man could potentially restrain two girls like that. The whole thing is so bizarre.
That's possibly the only argument that the prosecution could have put up and said, you know, as a matter of common sense.
Yeah.
It would have taken two people to murder two girls.
Yeah.
But that stage...
Nobody had common sense anymore.
Well, I wouldn't say that because the prosecutor is a really nice guy and he's very good at what he does.
Is he one of your pals?
Well, yeah, I suppose so.
Okay.
I suppose so, but I remember after the verdict, he disappeared. He just jumped on the train.
Yeah.
And he was away for like 12 hours or something. He just jumped on a train. He couldn't believe how the case had finished up. But as Edgar Prey said at the time, the judge had no alternative. But
It's not the prosecutor's fault, right?
No, it's not.
The judge, 100% the judge made this call.
Oh, yeah, I had to, yeah.
It's a bad call. Was the judge your friend?
No.
Okay, good.
No.
It was a bad call.
Well, it was a logical call.
Okay, what?
Because you can't convict somebody of murder on that evidence. I mean, you can't discount the possibility that A, it was consensual, and B, it was Hamilton.
But there's no explanation for how his semen got inside both of those girls without him being involved with these murders. There's just not. What, he was doing it in the van? I mean, where else?
Mm-hmm.
He didn't take them to a hotel. Like, there's no situation where this guy could have explained the series of events that ended up with those two girls murdered, naked, bound in separate fields.
Well, that's the whole point of the no case to answer. It's before the client gives evidence.
Yeah.
You test the Crown case and you say, is there a sufficiency of evidence?
Did he do it so that it could get prosecuted again? Should there be more evidence at some point? Was the judge perhaps doing it slightly because he thought there might be DNA advances in the future? Or was that just a complete... I can't get my head around it.
Well, no, I think that nobody could predict how the DNA was going to be.
Yeah, I mean, it is a pretty obscure thing, isn't it? Like,
it was
DNA
2007. It wasn't as advanced as it was in 2014.
In fact, like, brilliant person that thought to look. that's amazing that they thought to look.
Uh-huh, yeah. It was a cold case, as I say, and what they did was a forensic scientist called Lester Nibb, I think it was.
Yeah.
He had undone the knots, and then that's a clincher.
Yeah.
You've helped tie the knot.
Yeah, yeah.
Round this girl's neck.
Lester Nibb should get to be called Lord Nestor Lib Nibb. The judge that made that
that's
crappy
an unusual
decision.
Name, isn't it?
He can get his lord taken away from him. No. I mean, people are just doing their jobs, right? It's horrible to judge how difficult that must have been. I guess if he was presented with something he thought was absolutely indisputable, he has to do, like, you know, follow the letter
of the
law.
That's exactly right. He's got to.
And it still was the wrong call.
Right. So
it doesn't make sense. It doesn't make sense. You should have let the prosecutor have a crack at it, I think.
Well, I suppose that at that stage, had the prosecution survived the no case to answer submission, then the next thing the defence would have to do is decide whether they was going to give evidence or not. And I'm pretty sure that if Sinclair had given evidence, they'd been unanimous guilty.
Yeah.
Because they're just a lot of rubbish.
Yeah,
basically,
exactly, because you couldn't explain that situation because it's such a freaking unexplainable situation.
It is.
Yeah.
But you can't convict somebody if the evidence isn't there.
what's the whole point in having people can get convicted on circumstantial evidence, right?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
So the circumstantial evidence was not even circumstantial. His semen was found on two dead girls trussed up in two separate locations. He was in a van with those two girls, and he was with the other man whose semen was also found out. One of those two men killed, or both of them killed it. That's the only scenarios that worked. And even if one of the men had done all the murdering and the other one just stood back, well, then he still let it happen. Surely he's culpable of, like, a minimum of, like, standing and watching somebody get murdered. It doesn't make any sense to me. To be so argumentative.
No. I see what you're saying. That's very commonsensical. But at the same time, I don't think anyone's under any duty to stop somebody getting murdered.
What?
People will step in if they see somebody getting assaulted.
Yeah.
There's no doubt about it. But you don't have any legal requirement to stop a murder.
That's insane to me, because I would understand you don't have the duty to stop like manslaughter, like, or some crazy runs down the street with a knife. Of course, you've got no obligation to stop that because you could put your own life at risk, blah, 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 right? 100% get that. But somebody premeditates a murder, plans it in front of you, then goes and carries out that murder in front of you. You have not committed a crime at all by just being like, yeah, this is cool. I'm just going to stand here. That there's no crime committed. Is that right?
That's right.
I mean, what the hell?
I mean, what crime could you... You know, if somebody's going to murder somebody, what onus is there on a third party to step in?
But by not stepping in, they've participated in it.
I see what your point of view is. I see. So you're at in part, basically, is what they say, you're in concert with somebody.
Yeah.
By doing nothing.
Uh-huh.
Right.
But it's true. He has. He knew there was a raping van, right? He's at minimum has watched. He has also raped himself, but we're saying that for the sake of argument, that was consensual. Like he's participated in the crime. He knew it was going to happen. He's watched it happen. He's definitely participated in the raping piece. I mean, how is that not a crime? I don't understand that. If I watched you, see if you got a notebook out right now and you started planning like a murder, like you're going to go murder your wife, right? You're writing down details on it. And I don't go and report you to the cop shop. I'm participating in a murder.
Right. Well, I don't know if there's any sort of legal basis for saying that. I understand there's a common sense basis for saying it.
Yeah.
But there is no onus on anyone to step in to stop a murder.
It just blows my mind. I think there should be.
Well, possibly there should be, but...
A murder. I mean, a murder, like a premeditated, somebody has planned a murder, not just two people having a fight and one pulls a knife. I mean, like, you know what I mean?
Well, it was quite interesting because apparently Sinclair's van, the Toyota, was scrapped. He'd scrapped the van. So he must have been quite savvy when it came to the forensic side.
Right.
Because if they could have found the van and then found something that connected, the murders with the van, then they could show that it was his van.
Yeah.
But he scrapped it. So he obviously knew what he was doing.
Wait a minute. So what is Myra Hindley prosecuted on if we're saying that you can't be... Because she didn't kill the children on the moor. She just...
Ah, but she was involved in enticing them.
Right.
She was involved in... And in fact, when it's just a man on his own, people are more reluctant to get into a car or speak. I mean, the same as Fred and Rose West. If a couple are involved, then somehow people's guards down.
Right.
And
but is it not the same thing as these two guys? I mean, I know you're saying that having the presence of a woman is a more calming situation and people are more likely to trust them. But why does that make her more guilty than Hamilton?
Because she was up to making it. I mean, she was getting some sort of thrill.
He raped one of the girls. Well, both of the girls, right? He's raped them, so he's up to his neck in it too.
Well, that was the point that Edgar Praise made at the beginning. He'd said they couldn't prove it was anything other than consensual.
I'm never going to be able to articulate how much I don't understand. Well, you know what? We should do hire Myra Hindley and Ian Brady at some point. I don't want to do it because I think it will be horrific. But you can explain to me then why Hindley went into prison for basically enticing children to go and be murdered.
Because she knew what was going to happen to them.
But he knew what was going to happen to these girls.
How can you prove that?
Yeah, okay, fair point.
You can't prove that at all. Yeah. You can't show it in any way. But whereas Myra Hindley was on tape.
Well, you could say it about the second one. He knew what was going to happen to the second one because he'd just seen what happened to the first one on the night.
Yeah, I could possibly say that. But then who's to say that Hamilton hadn't disposed of one without him knowing?
Yeah.
You just don't know. But Hindley was on tape talking to these kids before they were murdered. In fact, we could justify Murder Scotland because Brady was from Glasgow.
Yeah, I know. Uh-huh. So it is one of those ones that I just think would be like, you don't even want to talk about it because it's so horrific.
It's almost as bad as Robert Black, isn't
it? Yeah. Well, worse, isn't it? Uh-huh. I mean, it's both of them are horrific, but Ian Brady not letting the families have the bodies back, uh-huh. like controlling them right to the end. Mm-hmm. Everything about mm-hmm. it is horrific. Everything. Mm-hmm. Robert Black was horrific too, though.
He was. Yeah. He was.
I think we'll leave this episode right here because Alan and I just continue to argue about Myra Hindley for quite some time. So I hope you enjoyed the episode and look forward to you listening next week. If you like our podcast, then please like and share with your friends. We would love to hear your feedback and ideas on Twitter at Murder Scotland. If you'd like any more information on our sources or Alan's books, you can find us at www.murderscotland.com. Murder Scotland is written, presented and produced by Alan Nicol. Presented, produced and edited by me, Julie Lamont. Our consulting producer is Paige Henderson. Music is called Moments by Adrian Walther, and a special thanks to Steve Garside and Miriam Watson for their unending support and patience with me and Alan.